You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 546. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 546. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. My version of Aha from the 1980s. Yeah, it needs a little work, I know. But you can go to our website while I'm working on that. Go to ESLPOD.com and become a member of ESL Podcast. You can't download any 1980s songs, but you can download a learning guide for this episode that contains a complete transcript of everything we say. Why not follow us on Twitter at ESLPOD and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ESLPOD. On this cafe, we're going to talk about one of my favorite stories growing up that we used to hear in school, the story of Paul Bunyan. We're also going to talk about a famous song from the 1930s, You're the Top. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. The legend of Paul Bunyan began in the late 19th century in the United States. A legend, L-E-G-E-N-D, is a story about something that happened many years ago and that is repeated but may not necessarily be true. Usually, it's a story about amazing things that a person did or an amazing event. Oftentimes, the details of the story are false or exaggerated, and many times the entire story is untrue. But people like to tell legends, especially ones that teach us certain lessons, moral, ethical, or otherwise. The legend of Paul Bunyan says that once upon a time, many years ago, there was a very large, strong man who carried an axe. An axe, A-X-E, is a tool used to cut a tree down and to chop, C-H-O-P, wood. To chop wood means to break the wood into smaller pieces so that you can use it for other things. According to this legend, this large man had an axe so big it was the size of a tree. I mean, it was a huge axe. The man's name was Paul Bunyan, and Bunyan carried this axe because his job was a lumberjack. A lumberjack, L-U-M-B-E-R-J-A-C-K, is a person whose job is to cut down trees that are then cut apart and used for building things. The legend is that Paul Bunyan traveled around the country, the United States, cutting down trees that were so large that often after he cut them down, he would end up creating spaces in the ground big enough for a lake or a river. The story says, for example, that Paul Bunyan created the Grand Canyon in Arizona and an area known as the Black Hills in South Dakota. A canyon, C-A-N-Y-O-N, is a deep valley or a very low place between mountains, usually with what we would call steep sides. In other words, the sides go up and down almost like a wall. The Grand Canyon is located in the southwestern part of the United States. The Black Hills is a series of large hills or small mountains in South Dakota and Wyoming in the central part of the United States. These are two famous places in the U.S., and the legend of Paul Bunyan tells us how they were created. Well, we know right away that that's probably not correct, but once again, the legend isn't necessarily meant to be truthful. Sometimes legends explain why certain things are the way they are in the world. And the legend of Paul Bunyan explains in part the creation of the Grand Canyon and the Black Hills. The story of Paul Bunyan also says that he created the Great Lakes so that his companion, a giant ox by the name of Babe, B-A-B-E, would have water to drink from. An ox, O-X, is a bull, a male cow, that, well, can no longer have children. Let's put it that way. Now, the Great Lakes, you may also know, are a series of five lakes in North America. Lake Superior, Lake Huron, Lake Ontario, Lake Michigan, and Lake Erie. The legend explains why we have the Great Lakes, because Paul Bunyan needed water for his ox. And so by creating the lakes, his ox had water to drink. Makes sense to me. The first stories about the legendary Paul Bunyan, the lumberjack, were told, you can guess, mostly among other lumberjacks. Now, working as a lumberjack was a very dangerous job for a man at this time, during the late 19th century. But, of course, it wasn't dangerous for Paul Bunyan. If a tree fell on a normal man, it could kill him. But if a tree fell on Paul Bunyan, he would just pick it up with his hands and move it. In other words, Paul Bunyan was sort of a hero to lumberjacks, a person who is admired for his actions. In the early part of the 20th century, James McGivelry wrote down some of these lumberjack legends about Paul Bunyan. He wrote a story called The Round River Drive, which first appeared in the Detroit News Tribune newspaper. Readers of the paper enjoyed the story of this legendary giant lumberjack, and soon lumber companies, which sold wood, started using Paul Bunyan as part of their advertising. Lumber, L-U-M-B-E-R, is what we call wood after you cut the tree down. Round pieces of wood from the tree are called logs, L-O-G-S. You cut the logs in half or in different sections, and then you get longer pieces of wood, usually that are square or rectangular, and we call these pieces of wood lumber. That's where we get the term lumberjack. One lumber company in particular, the Red River Lumber Company in my home state of Minnesota, started using Paul Bunyan in its advertisements. Why Minnesota? Well, there was a lot of lumber coming from Minnesota. Minnesota has lots of trees. And also because in one of the legends of Paul Bunyan, it is said that he was from, originally, Minnesota. Now, there's another story about Paul Bunyan that says he's from the state of Maine, which is located in the northeast corner of the United States. But that story, I can tell you, is completely false. The real Paul Bunyan, the real legendary Paul Bunyan, of course, he comes from my state, Minnesota. In the mid-1920s, the legend of Paul Bunyan appeared in writing once again, but this time for a larger number of readers. Two writers, Esther Shepherd and James Stephen, each wrote their own version of the Paul Bunyan legend and how big he was and the incredible things that he was able to do. The story soon became popular with mainstream audiences, that is, people who, in this case, were not lumberjacks or even from the state of Minnesota. Paul Bunyan began to appear in children's books and was even the topic of a short opera. In 1974, a popular American poet by the name of Shel Silverstein wrote a poem called Paul Bunyan, which he included in a collection of children's poems called Where the Sidewalk Ends. The poem begins by describing what Paul Bunyan looks like. He rode through the woods on a big blue ox. He had fists as big as chopping blocks. 500 pounds and 9 feet tall, that's Paul. The poem says he rode through the woods on a big blue ox. Babe, his ox, was blue, which is sort of an unusual color for an ox. In fact, I don't think you'll find any blue oxen in the world now, but back at the time, apparently, Paul Bunyan had a blue ox, and he rode on the ox through the woods, that is, through the trees. He had fists as big as chopping blocks, according to the poem. Your fist is your hand in a ball. When you take your thumb and fingers and put it into the shape of a ball, that's your fist. A chopping block is what you use to chop wood with. You put smaller pieces of wood onto a large round piece of wood, and you take an axe and you split the wood on the chopping block. The poem said he was 500 pounds and 9 feet tall. That's Paul. I actually think he was taller than 9 feet, but we won't argue about that here. There are a couple of different places where people have built statues of Paul Bunyan and his blue ox, including in my home state, the home of Paul Bunyan, after all, Brainerd, Minnesota. If you go to Brainerd, Minnesota, you can see a statue of Paul Bunyan and the blue ox. Paul Bunyan is one of many different legends that developed in the United States during the 19th and the 20th century of men who did heroic things, legends that often explained the way things were in the world, especially the geography of the country. This is a very common theme in different local and national literatures throughout history. The Greek myths, at least some of them, were also used to explain the way certain things were in the world, to explain physical geography, among other things. Unless, of course, the legend of Paul Bunyan is true, in which case, what can we say? That's history. We turn now to a famous song in American history, a famous song of the 1930s called You're the Top. You're the Top was written by one of the most popular songwriters of the 20th century, Cole Porter. Cole Porter was not a rock and roll songwriter. He was a popular songwriter, however, before the era of rock and roll. He was born in 1891 and began writing songs when he was only 10 years old. By the time he was in college, he was writing musicals, plays with song and dance. And by his early 30s, he was probably one of the most well-known musicians in the United States. His songs could be heard in Hollywood movies as well as in Broadway musicals. Porter wrote the song, You're the Top, for a musical in 1934 called Anything Goes. A musical is basically a play with music in it. The phrase "anything goes," which was the title of the musical, means everything is possible or everything is allowed. This particular musical was a comedy, and it was set in an ocean liner in the 1930s. When I say it was set in, I mean that's where the action of the musical takes place. An ocean liner is a very large ship that is used to transport people from typically one side of an ocean to another. If you were going, say, from Europe to the United States, you would probably go by ship in an ocean liner. The song "You're the Top" is a duet in the musical. A duet, D-U-E-T, is a song performed by two singers. In the musical, two of the characters, Reno Sweeney and Billy Crocker, are friends, but Reno is also in love with Billy. Billy, however, is in love with another woman by the name of Hope, who's a very rich and smart woman. Billy's worried that Hope could never love a man like him. Reno tries to make Billy believe that Hope could love him because he's such a wonderful person. And to do this, she begins to sing this song, "You're the Top." "You're the Top" means you're the greatest, you're the best. Billy joins her in singing, telling Reno that she is also a wonderful person. Now, to explain just how wonderful they think each other is, they use examples of places, people, and things that are considered the best examples of whatever it is they do. So if you were thinking of the best museum, you might say you're the Louvre, the famous museum in Paris. So the whole song is an example of these things, with the phrase "you're the top" in between each one of these examples. You're the top, you're the Colosseum, you're the top, you're the Louvre Museum. First, he compares her to the Colosseum, the large building in Rome. Next, he compares her to the Louvre Museum in Paris. So throughout the song, you hear examples of things that are considered wonderful or great. And the song is saying that the other person is as great as those things. Later in the song, he compares her to something called a Bendel bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T. A bonnet is an old kind of woman's hat, and Bendel was a very expensive woman's store in New York City. He also compares her to a Shakespeare sonnet, S-O-N-N-E-T. A sonnet is a kind of poem. Shakespeare wrote famously a whole set of sonnets. There are also popular cultural references in the song, such as Mickey Mouse. You're Mickey Mouse. That's considered a great thing. Part of the charm or fun of the song is that the two singers try to outdo each other. To outdo, O-U-T-D-O, someone, is to try to do better than the other person. To try to say something even greater than what the other person has said. And by the end of the song, there are 37 different places, people, and things that have been mentioned. If you go back and look at the words to the song, at least the official words to the song nowadays, you'll see a lot of terms and a lot of people mentioned that are no longer familiar even to most Americans. For example, one of the lyrics says something about an arrow collar. An arrow collar, C-O-L-L-A-R, is a part of a shirt that is attached to the top of the shirt. We don't use arrow collars in men's shirts anymore, but they were popular back in the 20s and 30s. There are several other people and places that are mentioned in the song that were popular in the early 30s, and were used by Cole Porter, even though most people don't know who or what they are today. However, there was one verse that was included in the original song that was removed within about a year or so of the song being released. In fact, you can hardly find these words in the official Cole Porter books that have his songs in them anymore. That verse was, "You're the top, you're the great Houdini." Houdini was a great magician during the early 20th century. "You're the top, you're Mussolini." Mussolini, of course, was the fascist leader of Italy in the 1920s, 30s, and early 40s. Now, fascism was quite popular among many Americans, especially American intellectuals and entertainers in the early and mid-1930s. However, in 1934, Mussolini invaded Ethiopia, and this caused many Americans to have a negative opinion of him. However, when the song was first written, Mussolini was considered to be something of a compliment in the song, just like Houdini was considered someone who was the top. After World War II, all memories of support for fascism among American intellectuals and entertainers was sort of, forgotten about. We didn't talk about it anymore. Although many references in the song are not familiar today to American listeners, the song has sort of a catchy tune, and it's still popular. It's still performed. Catchy, C-A-T-C-H-Y, means that it's likable and it's easy to remember. It was also a song recorded by many other artists, including Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong, Frank Sinatra, and more recently, Barbara Streisand. During his long career, Cole Porter wrote more than 1,200 songs. Many people consider this song, "You're the Top," to be his top song. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent for us. Our first question comes from Adele, not that Adele, A-D-E-L, from Saudi Arabia. This question has to do with three words: big, huge, and massive. All three words mean roughly the same thing. Big, B-I-G, means very large. Something might be large physically. That is, you might have a large house or a large building. It might be large in quantity or number. It might be a big salary, a lot of money that you get from your company. You might describe your daughter's boyfriend as a big disappointment. That is, a large disappointment. Huge, H-U-G-E, means the same as large. I guess we would usually use it to mean very large. Larger than big, let's say. It was a huge house, not just a big house, but something larger than a big house, a huge house. Massive, M-A-S-S-I-V-E, is similar to huge. It once again means very large. We might use massive also, however, when we're talking about something that is very heavy as well. It was a massive car means it was a very large car, but perhaps also a very heavy car, one that weighed a lot. We also use massive now sometimes when we mean very severe. It was a massive storm. That would mean it was not only a large storm, but perhaps a very violent one, or one that caused a lot of damage, a very severe storm. All three of these words, big, huge, and massive, could be used to describe news, some information that you have that you think is very important. The word massive is also used sometimes in the medical world to describe a very serious medical event, such as a heart attack or a stroke. If you say someone had a massive heart attack, you mean the person had a very large, serious heart attack, one that may have killed him. Our second question comes from Saeed, S-A-E-E-D, in Iraq. The question has to do with two expressions, at all and show off. The two terms are not related. At all means in any way or to any extent or any degree. It's a phrase we often use to make a statement more forceful, especially a negative statement. It's used, in other words, for emphasis. I don't like chocolate cake. I don't like chocolate cake at all. The at all at the end of the sentence is meant to give it more emphasis, to say I really, really don't like chocolate cake. Actually, I do like chocolate cake. That's just an example. Someone may ask you, do you like to drive? You may say, no, I don't like to drive at all, meaning I really don't like to drive, or I don't like to drive even a little bit. Show off can mean a couple of different things. As a noun, a show off is a person who tries to impress other people with his abilities or the things that he owns. It's a negative way of describing a person who tries to get other people to think he's great or to think he's wonderful because of what he can do or because, more typically, of what he owns, what he has. If you get a new watch, let's say a Rolex watch, and you go to all your friends and you say, hey, look at my new Rolex watch. Rolex is a very expensive kind of watch. Your friends might say you're a show-off. That is, you're trying to impress them, make them think that you are rich by showing them your watch. To show off as a verb can mean the same thing. It can mean to show other people your possessions or to talk about your abilities. It doesn't always have to be used in a bad way, as a negative way of describing someone's behavior. You could say, for example, that the actor really shows off her talent in this movie. You really see it. It's really demonstrated. It's easy to see. The phrasal verb to show off, then, can also mean simply to make something noticeable or easy to identify. Finally, Emeka, E-M-E-K-A, in Nigeria, wants to know the meaning of the expression to be beside yourself. To be beside, B-E-S-I-D-E, yourself, is to be in a very extreme emotional state, often because you are angry or upset about something. Although it could be used for a strong positive emotion when you're really happy about something. After he lost his job, he was beside himself. He was angry. He was upset. Or you could say, after he got a raise at his job, he was so happy he was beside himself. He was very emotional. To be beside yourself then means to feel a very strong emotion. Note that to be beside another person means to be next to another person. Who's that sitting beside your brother? Who is that sitting next to your brother? That's the meaning of beside in that context. But to be beside yourself means to be very emotional about something, either in anger or in happiness. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. We don't mind answering your questions at all, if we have time. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. A massive thank you for listening to us today. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe. TSL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. This podcast is copyright 2016 by the Center for Educational Development.